My name's Kurt. I'm lead pastor at Crosspoint. Really excited that you're here with us this morning. We realize, you know, on a beautiful weekend like this, there's a lot of other places you could be, so we can consider it a privilege that you'd choose to join us here at Crosspoint. A couple things before we get into what we're talking about today. When you came in, you should have received a weekly that looks like this. Go ahead and take that out. Inside is all kinds of information. If you're a guest with us this morning, we're really excited you're here, and we encourage you to take a moment and flip through this. There's information on our children's environments, on transitions for our kids' environments coming up next weekend, if your child is moving classrooms, as well as information on our student ministry and our next launch pad, all kinds of stuff in there that will help you kind of understand who we are, how to get connected around this place. So we encourage you to take and read over that. Also inside your weekly, you will find a connection card that looks like this. And I want to ask every single one of us right now, we always go for 100% participation on this. And so go ahead and grab this card out of your weekly and grab a pen next to you on the seat or maybe underneath you. And if you're a partner or regular attender, we just need you to fill out your name on this card, and then if you've had any information, contact information, email, home address, phone numbers that have changed that you'd like to share with us, mark the box there and we'll update those. And then if you're a guest, again, we would love to have you fill this card out as well, really with as much information as you're comfortable sharing with us this morning. And so after you get done filling that out, you know, if you're interested in some information, some of our free resources, other things, there's some places on the back where you can request that as well. And then when you're finished filling that out, you can place it underneath your chair or someplace where you can refer to it later on this morning. Now, as you're filling those out, a couple things coming up around here. Next weekend, we begin a brand new series called Climate Change. Has anybody noticed how screwy the weather climate patterns have been over the last months? I mean, we went from like 90, you know, 100 degrees down to what? Like a beautiful 74 degree day, you know, in the past week. And, you know, through these next 4 weeks, we're going to be taking a look at how, you know, climate isn't just an outdoor thing. I mean, you know, you and I, we create atmospheres every day. And so we're going to be taking a look at some of the patterns that we create and how when we change those patterns, it actually changes the climates around us. And not just physically around us, with the people we interact with every day, but how these reach even to the far reaches of the world. And so we hope you'll join us as we begin this four-week look at that next Sunday. Also, next weekend, we have something called Explore Crosspoint, and this is for those of you who are maybe newer to Crosspoint. Maybe you're here for the first time, or maybe you've been here, you know, 6, 8, 10 times, and you're just like, you know, I'd like to ask some questions or find out a little bit more of where this place is going. This is something we do every, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, and it will be happening next Sunday, beginning at noon, so immediately following this second service, and we'll provide free lunch, free childcare if you need it, and you can sign up on the back of your connection card, and again, just a time for us to share some of the frequently asked questions and answer those for you, as well as for you to ask anything you might want to find out about, and specifically to find out how to get connected around here when you're ready to do that. And so we invite you to join us next weekend. And then last, we are beginning today another initiative with our Bucket Project. And the Bucket Project is an initiative by which Crosspoint gets involved in the community through some local schools in the greater Indianapolis area. And so this project we're beginning today is a uniform drive. And one of our partner schools is IPS 96 on the west side of Indianapolis. They have a poverty level at about 80-85% of their clientele at their school is below poverty level. And one of the things we do is come alongside and pour resources and energy, whatever is needed, into that school community. It's one of the ways we believe we're carried out and being a blessing, one of the things God asks us to do to those in our community. And so what you have in your weekly is a shopping list. It looks like this. And we're giving this to you so that as you do last minute school shopping this week, if you have children, you know, you can take this list with you and maybe you can pick up some items of school uniforms for students who otherwise wouldn't have it. And you might be thinking, you know, Kurt, what's the big deal? I mean, school uniforms, I mean, they're pretty basic, you know. Here's the big deal. There are children at this school who cannot go to school so far. The school year began a week and a half ago, have not been able to go to school because they don't have uniforms. They don't have the money to purchase uniforms. And so here's the cool thing. You know, we always talk about how cool it could be to go to Africa or to, you know, the far reaches of the world to serve people. You get to sleep in your own bed and yet be missional at the same time. Right here in your own community, you can purchase some uniforms and literally change the trajectory of a student's life. I mean, allow them to get back in school, to get an education, to change the trajectory potentially of their life. life. So take this list with you, and there are going to be bags that look like this at the back door as well. The greeters will have them, the door greeters, when you leave today. If you'd like to take a bag to remind you, it has the list on it as well. You can take this to the store with you, and you can bring these items back any of the next 7 weeks and leave them inside the front door. There'll be a designated place, and every weekend these will go down to IPS 96 to put in the hands. Now, just talked to the principal this week, and she said that they have a pretty good supply of boys' uniforms. They're in desperate need of girls' uniforms. So if you can highlight the girls' items on this list, that would be a great, great benefit as we pour into the community through the Bucket Project. Well, as PJ said a few minutes ago, we do have a great service plan today. You know, we've been in this series. In fact, we're wrapping it up today called Losing Our Religion. And this has really been what's turned into a six-week look at how Jesus came to revolt against certain things, certain ways, certain things that were going on in the culture that he lived in. And we've been taking a look at how these intentional revolts are actually a part of him establishing this thing called the kingdom of God. And we've been discovering that, you know, many of the things Jesus calls us to actually go countercultural to many of the values, many of the things, even as Americans, that we say, well, we should have the right to certain things, or we should, you know, be able to enjoy, or you know, God's way is American way. And as much as we love, as much as I love living in the United States, I believe it's the greatest country in the world to live in, you know, God's ways aren't always exactly lined up with the values of the American way. And so we've been diving into some of these ways that Jesus revolted against some of the things that were happening in his culture as he established this thing called the kingdom. Now today, this is kind of an add-on week. Today we've extended this series, and we're going to be taking a look at Jesus' revolt against the abuse of sex. And we've just began to realize this is a really, really big issue that was going on in Jesus' day, a really, really big issue going on today as well. And as we look at this today, a couple caveats that I just want to share with you. First of all, you know, for those of you who are CrossPoint regulars, today is going to be what's called a strategic redundancy. All right, there are certain things that I'm going to share today that you may have heard from this stage before. You know, Jesus's position on many of these issues, it doesn't change. And yet this is such a big, big issue that I continue to meet with people and kind of have conversations with people here and in my community. And I look at this whole issue of sexuality, it's a big, big deal. And I just sit back and I say, man, hasn't anybody ever cared enough to tell you what God's design is for this? So there's certain things you may have heard from this stage before. Another thing, caveat, is that, you know, I'm not going to be doing anybody any favors to choose my words carefully today, all right? I'm not going to skirt around issues. I'm going to be as open and honest as I can with you, as we really do every weekend. And, you know, I'm going to talk to you like we're sitting on my back patio. If I wouldn't say it on my patio, I'm not going to say it to you today. And yet, the reality is, you know, the things we're going to dive into today, these aren't things that you're going to hear on PBS. These aren't things you're going to hear on the radio. You're not going to hear these things, you know, on TV or in movies. And yet, you know, these are big, big deals. And so, and it's such a big deal. The third caveat is this, that, you know, we're just going to begin to scratch the surface on this today. You know, in the course of 25, 30 minutes, I can't begin to dive into the depth of this issue, even though we're going to go into some pretty deep things. But the one thing I really want us to grasp today about this revolt that Jesus calls us to is this. This thing right here. If you forget everything else and don't capture anything else this morning, I want you to think about this statement. Say no to sex before and outside of marriage allows you to say a stronger yes to the beauty of sex within marriage. And so I really want us to go into unpacking some pictures of what this looks like today. Now, before we do that, let's just take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we can gather in this room, this dark room. We can gather. I'm thankful for every single person that's here today. And I don't begin to believe we all come from the same understandings of the Bible or the Scripture, or even beliefs about who you are. And at the same time, I know that there's a varied number of opinions and perspectives on sexuality, on marriage, on love, on how these all are integrated into one another. And yet today, God, I'm going to ask you would help us to get a clear line, a through line, into seeing the beauty that you created for this thing. God, help us to see things that maybe we've never seen before. Help us to see things in our own lives that maybe we, for the first time, are like, man, I never understood it that way. And God, as a result of that, may we begin to change some of the patterns or our perspectives or our thinking to become more aligned and experience more of the design that you have for this in our lives. I pray, God, that you would be with everything we do in these next few moments, every word that I say. Help me to be articulate and, most importantly, accurate. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. You know, as we talk about this revolt today, you know, one of the really clear things I want us to get right off the bat is that God is very, very pro-sex. Very, very pro-sex. In fact, we see it all throughout the scriptures. God talks about it a lot. In fact, in the very first book of the Bible, God kind of gives us a picture of how this whole sex thing operates, as we're going to look at today about how this is intended for a man and a woman to kind of merge and become one. You know, we see in the Bible people who are staring at their father's nakedness. We see a prophet who's told to go and marry a prostitute. And then, you know, we see these concubines and this wife swapping, per se. I mean, all kinds of interesting things, this very recreational view of things that are going on in the culture and how God speaks to these issues. And just as in Jesus' day, you know, there's a lot of recreational approach to sexuality today. You know, sex and love is a big, big deal. We joke about it. Most of our music is written about it. Many of our movies, actually, this is a main through line, as we're going to see in just a moment, from this scene here, this great scene from the movie Crazy Stupid Love. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but if not, I want to show you this scene and just how deep our approach to sexuality actually impacts not only our lives, but the lives of our family as well as our friends. Take a look.
Welcome, class of 2011. Our time as middle schoolers has come to an end. We can't fight it anymore. We're getting old. All my life, I wanted to grow up. I wanted to grow older so people would take me seriously. It all sounded so good to me. Growing up, getting a job, getting married. But it's all a scam. And love, that's the biggest scam of all. I was in love. And I know that makes some of you laugh, because I'm only 13, but whatever, I was. And I used to think and really believe that there was one true love for everyone, and if you fought hard enough for that person, your one true love would always work out. It sounded good to me when I was younger, but just doesn't work that way. There is no such thing as one true love.
Stop!
Oh boy.
Excuse me.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
I was wrong. There's no such thing.
Well, here's the thing. My son's graduation speech sucks. That's not a joke. In fairness, I didn't know where he was going with that, but I think we can all agree it was headed in a kind of depressing way. My son, not him, my actual son, believes in grand romantic gestures. He believes in the existence of one's soulmate. And it's easy to just look at a 13-year-old and say, you don't know what you're talking about. You are wrong. But I'm not so sure. I met my soulmate when I was 15 years old. We went out for ice cream. After my dad started teasing me about my first date, the way dads do, and I told him, Dad, it's no big deal. I'm gonna be going out with a lot of different girls on a lot of different dates. And that is the first time that I ever lied to my father. I met my soulmate when I was 15 years old, and I have loved her every minute of every day since I first bought her that mint chocolate chip cone. I have loved her through the birth of my three perfect children. I have loved her even when I've hated her. Only married couples will understand that one. And I don't know if it's gonna work out. I don't know what's gonna happen. Sorry, Robbie, I can't give you that. But I can promise you this. I will never stop trying. Because when you find the one, you never give up. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I still love you, Jessica.
And I love you, Emily.
So, you know, I don't know what you think about the whole soulmate thing. I mean, that, you know, that's a whole other thing. But, you know, when Julie and I saw this movie, it's really interesting because we saw this, and I'm going to be honest, there's some crude parts in this. I mean, typical Steve Carell, and yet there were some friends of ours that actually walked in, sat right next to, kind of behind us, next to us, and I thought I heard them laughing throughout all this movie. And you know, until we ran into them after the movie, and they're like, oh, my word. And I don't know if it was because they knew I was a pastor. You know, whenever a pastor's in the room, like, oh, we can't laugh at that stuff, you know. So we run in and they're like, oh man, you know, we're gonna go ask for our money back from the manager. That was terrible. What did you think, Kurt? And I was like, well, you know, honestly, I thought, man, there's at least 5 scenes I got to show Crosspoint sometime, because this it really kind of depicted some of the realities of what happens when we abuse sex, when we take a recreational view of sex. If you're not familiar with the movie, Cal Weaver, there, played by Steve Carell, he basically, you know, was just this pretty traditional guy in what he thought was a happy marriage. His wife comes one day and says, I want a divorce. She had an affair on him, and he just kind of goes off into these sexcapades, trying to kind of hurt her back, just to kind of, you know, do his thing for a while, since he'd never done that, and he begins to realize the damage it's creating for his life as well as the impact it's having on his kids. And it's one of those things that, you know, we don't like to talk about. We don't like to talk about the abuse of sex. I mean, you know, and we don't like to talk about how, you know, sex, when we abuse sexuality, this gift that God created called sex, when we abuse it, we are actually operating in a way that's diametrically opposed to the kingdom of God that Jesus came to establish. And at the same time, leaving a wake of damage and woundedness and brokenness behind us. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to speak to a bunch of students in our community, 9th to 12th grade students at Student Venture. One of our partner, missional partners here, Mark and Angie Rumchek, started a new campus venture site at Hamilton Southeastern High School. And it was February, they were doing a series on sex, and he heard that I love talking about sex, so he invited me to come and share with the kids, and, you know, just kind of unpacked, you know, some things. I thought, you know, maybe there's some kids who have never heard some of God's design for this. And, you know, it's one of those things where you never know how it's going to set. I mean, I used to do student ministry, and now I'm like, I'm old old and removed. I don't know if they're connecting with what I'm sharing, if they're not. The next day, he sent me this email right here, and he told me about this girl who had, it was her second time that she was at this event, and she received Christ the first time. So freshman girl just received Christ, came to her second student venture event, and he said right after the meeting, she received a text from a guy that wasn't there at that meeting that night saying, do you want to be my F, you can fill in the blank there, buddy. And look at her response right there. I just heard a talk about how valuable your sexuality is, so no. And I thought, you know, nobody's ever told her. Nobody has ever told her how valuable this is. Nobody's ever told her that saying no to sex before marriage and outside of marriage actually allows you to say a stronger yes to the beauty of sex within marriage. And this isn't just a teenage deal. I mean, this isn't just something we see. I see this lived out with adults of every age, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, who continue to say yes to sex before and or during marriage, outside of the context of marriage with somebody else, and they lose that ability to say yes to the beauty of what God created this thing to be. And, you know, for the last several years, the number one word searched on all search engines has been the word sex. In fact, I recently saw a statistic that back in 2006, the porn industry had a revenue of $13 billion, which was more than Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA markets combined. I mean, this is how big an issue this is, a very recreational approach. And what's interesting about these statistics is it doesn't really matter. You know, there's not really a lot of differentiation between those who call themselves followers of Jesus and the rest of our culture. We have a very recreational view of sexuality. And so as we look today at how Jesus revolted against the abuse of sex, you know, I want to do more than look at the hundreds of prohibitions that we find throughout the scriptures where Jesus and God kind of lay this out. I really want to go deeper into the why sex is such a big deal and how God's prohibitions maybe aren't so prudish, but maybe they're actually, there's some beauty in them. There's actually love canvassed all throughout these, and as God tries to help us understand the role of this thing in our lives. and how when we actually say no to sex before and outside of marriage, that we actually can say yes, a stronger yes to the beauty of sex within the context of marriage. So the first thing I really want to do is I want us to look at two different pictures of God's expression for this relationship this morning. The first one is founded in this idea that God designed sexual intercourse to create a new sacred oneness between a man and a woman that is intended to get this word right here, never. To never be broken. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but that God's intention was that it would never be broken. In fact, at one point, the religious leaders who were really a part of this revolt, if you per se, that Jesus was creating, the people he was revolting against, they actually tried to lure him into a conversation on this issue, tried to kind of get him into this dialogue on what constituted the kind of permissible reasons for divorce. You see, Moses had given certain permissions that under certain circumstances, divorce, if a man found his wife, something indecent in his wife, then he could divorce her. And of course, the question was, what does that mean? I mean, what does something indecent actually mean? Well, there were two schools of thought on this among the rabbis. One rabbinic school of thought said, this was the school of Shammai, they were real strict on this one. And they basically said, hey, the only grounds for divorce is if there's something sexually immoral that takes place, or adultery or an affair. It's only under those two circumstances that a man has the right to divorce his wife. And then this other school of thought was the school of Hillel, and this was a real loose school. I mean, there were rabbis in this school, and it was kind of like anything goes. I mean, it was like the rabbis would say, hey, if your wife burns your dinner, then you have the right to divorce her. That's indecent. I mean, that's something that's indecent. I mean, if she walks around with her hair unbound, because there were certain laws against this at the time, she walks around with her hair unbound, then you have a right to divorce her. I mean, it said things like, you know, if you argue and if your wife argues in a voice loud enough to be heard by the neighbors next door, thank God we still don't have that today, then you, this is grounds to divorce your spouse. I mean, the rabbinic writings would say things like, you know, if she rents two consecutive chick flicks from Redbox, and she's out. I mean, it was very, very loose, very loose. You have the school of Shammai, the school of Hillel. Can you imagine which was more popular of the day, right? I mean, you know, depending on where you were falling. And so when the Pharisees are coming to Jesus, they're saying, Jesus, which of these two camps do you line up with? Now, they're not seeking knowledge right here. They're really not seeking to try to understand or wisdom of any kind. They're really trying to alienate a whole bunch of the followers that were gravitating to this revolt Jesus was creating. And unfortunately, this is what the church has done for hundreds and hundreds of years. They've used this issue too often throughout history to really polarize people. And so here's what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 19. He says, haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. And so in this passage right here, we find the two covenants, the two vows that Jesus kind of breaks down of what takes place when a man and a woman join their lives together. And the first is found in this statement right here. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. Now, to some of you who basically have boomerang kids in your home, maybe they've graduated from high school, gone to college, and now they're back living with you, you're like, awesome, I can't wait for the day when they leave and cleave with their spouse and they're not returning to my home anymore. But this wasn't just about like getting rid of your kids. The whole idea right here was this idea of leaving your father and mother and uniting, cleaving. This is called the leave and cleave principle right here. That I'm cleaving to my spouse when I begin this new relationship. See, to this point in life, your highest level of human commitment had been to your family of origin, the family that raised you. And this is basically saying, from this point forward, when you enter this new covenant, this new relationship, you are now to cleave to your spouse. Basically saying your spouse now is to be the thing that you honor above everything else in life. This should be your first allegiance. Everything else should be a distant second. And let me tell you what, this is incredibly important to grasp right here. I as I meet with couples, as I do kind of the front end, you know, intervention with couples who are struggling in with marriage issues, I time and time again see this vow of loyalty broken. I mean, it might be, you know, that there's unresolved issues with your parents and you're constantly in this battle of, do I honor my parents' requests even as a grown adult, or do I really put my spouse, is my first allegiance to my spouse? You got to work that one out. That's got to be worked out. But it lives its way out in other ways. I mean, it may be things like, you know, there may be a relationship you have at work that has never gone physical, but it's gone emotional. And then there's a part of emotionally, you've crossed a boundary and you're given a part of who you are to this individual. You've broken that vow of loyalty right there. mean, you've undermined your marriage covenant, this vow to say, my spouse is a second to nothing. And everything else is a distant second. It could be a relationship on Facebook. Maybe you've never met somebody or you haven't seen them in 20 years. But, you know, there are ways you can undermine your current marriage vows, this vow of loyalty. It could be things like hobbies or sports or work. I mean, where all of a sudden these things become the mistress in your life and they're not a distant second from the way that you pledge your allegiance to your spouse. And let me just be honest with you. If anything else is even a close second to your relationship with your spouse, if you're married, you are undermining your marriage. You're undermining your covenants. If you're somebody who's involved with someone physically, emotionally, who is still married, you're undermining their marriage. Jesus goes on. So he says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, cleave to his wife. This is the first vow, the vow of loyalty. The second vow, and the two shall become one flesh. And so this is the second covenant. It's the promise of intimacy. It's this idea that what was once two is now one. What once was alone is now connected and together. That now no longer do I have my stuff and you have your stuff, but it's our stuff. It's our dreams. It's our life. It's this sense of no longer are we two individuals with our own aspirations. Even though we have those, we're going to choose to go at life together. Just this past week, I was meeting with a wedding coordinator at one of the wedding venues, kind of popular wedding venues here in the greater Indianapolis area. We're sitting down, and she was asking me some questions about how I approach ceremonies, I was explaining to her, man, I'm pretty easy when it comes to ceremonies. I mean, I feel like this is the bride and groom's, you know, ceremony. I want to make it fit them. I don't care what readings they do for the most part. I really don't care what music they do. But I said, you know, there are a couple things that if you do these things, you're going to do them right. And she kind of like perked up in her seat all of a sudden. She's like, oh, kind of like, well, what are those? And I said, well, the unity candle for one. And she said, oh, absolutely. I'm that way too. I love when couples leave those candles lit on the outside after they light the center one. And I'm like, oh, really? Interesting. I'm like, well, why exactly, you know, what makes you think that? She's like, oh, the pictures are beautiful when you've got the three lights across the front. And I said, I can give you that. But I said, let me throw another thinking into how you're understanding this. You know, I said, you know, when you join your lives, the unity candle is a symbol of what's taking place right there. When you join your lives, you're no longer two, but one. And when you set those candles out on the outside, I mean, this is what Jesus revolted for right here. He's saying, hey, this is two people who are forsaking everything previous in their life and saying from this point forward, we're one together going forward. Everything else is a distant second. And so, you know, I said, when I do a ceremony, those unity candles, if I have to go blow them out, will be blown out at the end. And she's like, obviously, you've given more thought to this than I have. And so, you know, it was a really fun conversation, if I can be honest. And yet at the same time, you know, every now and then somebody will say, come on, Kurt, I mean, how big a deal is that? I mean, I can be married but still kind of do my own thing. Well, that's probably why you're divorced today. Or nearly divorced, or you're struggling in your marriage. There's something about saying, hey, when we join our lives, we're no longer two, we're one. There's a oneness that takes place here. Jesus goes on, verse 7. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. Now understand, men were the only ones that could divorce their wives in this day. And so, you know, different context of what was going on, but that's why it's written this way. The key phrase right here, though, is because your hearts were hard. Because your hearts were hard. The Greek here, the Greek word for that phrase, is actually the word cardia sclero. Cardia meaning heart, sclero meaning the hardening of a membrane or tissue. So it's literally the physical definition of a hardening of the heart muscle. And so the idea here is what was once tender and flexible and hey, what can I do to serve you? How can I carry your bags? You know, how can I help you, you know, accomplish something you're doing at work? How can I serve you? How can I take care of the kids and give you a little bit of a break? What once was pliable, seeking to serve, has become hard and self-centered. And I know the thinking. I've had these conversations. Come on, Kurt. I mean, come on. I mean, I can be one with my spouse and we can be married, but I can still do my sex thing on the side or my pornography thing on the side. And it doesn't affect my relationship with my spouse. Listen, I've been down that path. Here's what I've discovered. The more you do a specific thing that God doesn't approve of, the more hardened you'll become. I mean, it's like it's a defense mechanism in certain ways. It's like, you know, the first time maybe you cheated on your income taxes. Not that I would encourage that. But, you know, if you've ever done that or cheated on anything else, you know, when you're doing that, when you're signing that paper, I mean, your heart's beating. You're like, oh, man, I hope I don't get audited because I know this isn't real accurate. And then as you're walking those papers to the mailbox, you've got this, like, pit in your stomach. Like, oh, do I really want to drop this in? And then the moment you drop it in, for the next, like, weeks until you get your refund or whatever comes back your way, you're worried. And then nobody finds out and everything. Nobody even found out that you cheated. And what happens? The next year rolls around, you have no problem signing your name on the bottom of that. You've lost that sick feeling walking that to the mailbox because your heart's become hard. It's not that it's not wrong anymore. It's that you've become hard and your heart's not sensitive to that any longer. And so, you know, anything that you and I do repeatedly that's against, it's not the way God designed it to be, eventually our hearts get hardened on it. Verse 8, Jesus says, but it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. So God permitted divorce because of the hardness of people's hearts. He's saying, hey, you can't change people's hearts. People's hearts get hard. They no longer want to go together, want to go the same direction. They no longer want to make you their first allegiance, and there's nothing you can do about that. The only way marriage works is when two hearts are pliable and tender and sensitive to one another. And God's basically saying all divorce involves sin. It involves sin because it's dissolving something that God himself joined together. When God joins us together, see, according to Jesus, when a man and a woman come together in sexual intercourse, something profound, something mysterious, something spiritual is going on right there. And in some unique way, Jesus is making what was once two, now one in a million different ways. It's the vow of intimacy, the vow of loyalty. And so Jesus, he gives us this picture of saying a stronger yes to the context of sex within marriage by saying no to sex outside or before marriage. Now, you might be somebody who, you know, still trying to figure out what you think about this stuff. You might be saying, Kurt, you know, I'm not really into that stuff. I don't even know if I really believe Jesus is who he said he is or the Bible's true. First let me say, I'm really excited you're here. Because, you know, Crosspoint was created for people like you. It was created to be a place where you could come and explore and pursue at your own pace. And yet, what I also want to say to you is I realize I might get some pushback on this, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I don't expect every single person that comes in here to just kind of go along with whatever we say or to believe everything that the Bible says or that we teach from this platform, though I do want to add a category to your thinking this morning. You know, and this is what it is. Historically, marital fidelity has not been a part of religion. All right, let me say that again. Historically, religion has not said that sex with only between married individuals is the way that religion embraces it. In fact, historically, religions of all kinds have celebrated all kinds of sex in many ways, many forms, even with prostitutes. In fact, man-made religions almost always give permission for men to have sex with multiple women. And so it's kind of like this. When Moses went up to get the top 10 list from God, or what some call the top 10 suggestions that you might want to live your life by, or the 10 commandments. We call them commandments. And so, you know, when Moses went up to get these things up on the mountain after he led the nation of Israel out of Egypt, there's millions of people that are following Moses as Moses is leading this nation out of Egypt. And you know, at this particular time in the nation of Egypt, you know, in this pagan culture, you know, sexual fidelity, marital fidelity was not a value that was lifted up, similar to our experience today. In fact, if you would have talked about marital fidelity, people would have laughed you off the mountain. All right, and so let me ask you a question. Guys, I guess specifically for guys, you know, men, if you're Moses and you're up on this mountain and you fooled all these people into thinking you're a prophet, all right? So maybe Moses isn't really who he says he is or who the Bible says he is. You fooled these millions of people you've led out of slavery in Egypt to thinking you're a prophet, and they think you're bringing God's commands, God's instructions down from this mountain, but in the back of your mind, you just know it's a sham. I mean, you're like, man, but when I come down, I can be like, hey, I'm the father of this nation. I'm the king. I'm the ruler. Whatever I say, God says this is what needs to go. All right. I mean, think about this. Would you have come up with the same commands that God came up with? I mean, think about what commands you would have come up with if that was the position you were in, and it's all a sham. And let me just tell you what you would not do. You would not have come up with what God came up with. All right. You would not have come up with this idea. You would have come up with what every other man-made religion has come up with, that it's okay to have, you know, sex with multiple people. I mean, that's what every man-made religion comes up with. You see, when men manufacture religion, women become a commodity. And that's what was taking place in that day, similar to what's taking place today. And yet Moses is very clear. He comes down with these Ten Commandments, and it's very clear, one man with one woman for life. And then Jesus kind of echoes this in really extreme terms. He says, one woman with one man for life. And this is the picture that Moses gives us. So let's fast forward, you know, a couple thousand years. Jesus has come, he's lived, he's died, and now there's this guy by the name of the Apostle Paul who's coming, and he's kind of echoing Jesus' teachings to all of these new communities. And he goes out to this city by the name of Corinth. And the city of Corinth is filled with Greek thinking and Roman thinking. There were really no Jewish influences in this community. These were people who hadn't really grown up around Jesus or being familiar with his teachings. And so Paul goes into the city of Corinth and he sees these new Christians who are here just now hearing the story of Jesus. They're growing in their relationship with Christ, and he takes a look at their sexual lives and he just steps back. He's like, wow, nobody's ever cared enough to tell him. And so he brings this picture of sex that's not really religious to this community. In a real sense, it's something because the pictures of that culture, hey, have sex with whoever you want. It's a recreational thing. It doesn't really matter. There's no such thing as marital fidelity. But I think God maybe perhaps looked down at that sin-filled community and just said, Paul, somebody's got to tell them. Somebody needs to reveal and share with them this picture of how he created this beautiful thing to be experienced, how he designed this. And so the Apostle Paul in the city of Corinth, it's filled with things like temple prostitution. He goes into this tiny little community known as the church. And he says that this group of people are growing in the relationship with Jesus, beginning to live out kingdom values. He says, listen, I might step on your toes a little bit. This might be a little bit offensive to you, but I don't think what you're doing is what God had in mind when he instituted this beautiful thing called sexuality. And so with that in mind, what we're about to read isn't this narrow-minded religious man. This is Paul trying to reveal God's heart because he cares for him to this community of people who are trying to figure this thing out. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. He begins by saying, flee from sexual immorality. Now notice the key word there, flee. He doesn't say resist it. He doesn't say manage it appropriately. He says, hey, when you see sexual immorality, flee from it. Get away from it. In fact, in chapter 7, he actually defines sexual immorality as any kind of sexual experience outside the context of a marriage relationship. And then this next phrase right here is absolutely brilliantly insightful. He says, all other sins, meaning this category of sin is set apart from any other category of sins that people commit. I mean, this is unbelievable. He's about to tell us what, you know, from 2,000 years ago, what we intuitively know and experience, at least when we think logically about this today. Think about this. He says, all sexual sin, this is a category that is set apart, not because it's unforgivable, not because you're condemned to hell if you have any sexual sin, but he says, all sexual sin, he says, this is a primary category that's set aside because the depth to which the damage that's done when people have sinned sexually in their lives damages not only the offender, but it damages the one who's offended at extreme levels. He says there's deep woundedness out of this. He says all other sins a person commits are outside the body, but whoever sins sexually is a category of its own, he's saying, sins against their own body. Think about this. I mean, what would you expect a loving father to say to his children whom he loves? I mean, God's saying basically, when you sin sexually, when you step out of my design for sexuality, you hurt yourself. You hurt people around you. You hurt people at the deepest level imaginable. You hurt yourself in ways that sometimes is going to carry with you for the rest of your life. And he's saying, hey, I'm just telling you this because nobody apparently has ever taken the time to tell you. And then look back a few verses earlier. He says, do you not know? And this next word he used here just shocked. It shocked his audience, as it probably does some of us today. He says, do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? For it is said, the two will become one flesh. But whoever is united with the Lord is one with him in spirit. There's that phrase again, the two will become one flesh. Now here's how the Corinthians understood this verse right here. They looked at this and they read this and they're saying, Paul, they're looking at that little word unites right there, that little word. And they're like, Paul, unites? Nobody's talking about uniting right here. I mean, the idea of uniting is like super glue. Uniting is like Gorilla tape stuck together, one on the other. Uniting is like scrambled eggs. Like once you scramble them, they're so intertwined that you can't separate it anymore. Nobody's talking about uniting with prostitutes. We're just talking recreational sex. We're just talking about a little fun. We're talking about going down to the temple, paying a little fee to a prostitute, having sex, having a little religious experience, and then we go on our merry way. Who's talking about uniting right here? And Paul's saying, whoa, 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 this is why I'm telling you this. Because nobody's ever cared to tell you when you do this. You are uniting. You're connecting. You're integrating at the deepest levels. And they're like, one, we're not becoming one. I mean, I was just going on spring break with my girlfriends and doing what they were doing. We're just having a little fun. I mean, we're not uniting. We're not getting connected for the rest of our lives. And Paul's like, that's because nobody's ever cared to tell you about this. See, sin, when you get connected at an intercourse level, at a sexual level, with person after person after person, whether it's in real life, over the screen, in the pages of a magazine, he says, when this happens, you damage your intimacy factor. You damage it. You damage your ability to experience what God intended to happen within the context, the beautiful context of a marriage relationship. And you disconnect with the intimacy, the connection that God intended, and eventually you just become numb. Eventually, you just don't feel anything at all. Eventually, sex loses that beauty that God intended for it to be. And ladies, sometimes you wonder, you know, why your husband can't awaken that thing in you. Maybe it's just because there's a numbness there that's been created over time. And maybe you've damaged something so fragile, so beautiful, so powerful, that there's just nothing left to feel. Paul says, I'm just telling it to you because nobody's cared to take the time to do so. This is why this whole idea of saying no to sex before and outside of the marriage context applies to every single one of us, allows us to say a stronger yes to the beauty of what God created. And here's the cool thing. Those of you that are single, those of you that are students, you never have to experience what I just described. I mean, if you grasp this, if you can grasp this and really understand the why sex is such a big deal, you never have to experience some of that stuff. Now, I know, and we talk about, these are heavy, heavy things. I mean, when we talk about stuff like this, I mean, this is why Jesus revolted against this. Because this, what's going on in our culture today, was the same thing going on in Jesus' culture. And I know that a message like this, it lands in a lot of different places. Man, I know there's probably some of us that have a lot of guilt right now because that's all we've ever known from religious experiences. You know, maybe you have some regret that's going on. Maybe you're in your mind thinking, man, I wish so-and-so was here listening to this today. You're texting them, you need to be here today, you know? I mean, I'm sure there's some of that going on. Maybe some of you are thinking, man, I wish somebody would have told this to me sooner. Or maybe there's a few of us that are saying, maybe a little, you know, go preach it. Way to go. That's exactly what I believe. I need to hear more of that. Probably not too much of that. But, you know, I know this lands in different places for all of us. And so here's what I want us to do. I want us to just kind of reflect on what does this mean for me? You know, where am I at in this picture? You know, Jesus revolted against the beauty, the abuse of sex so that we could say yes to the beauty of sex. I mean, God is very, very pro-sex within a certain context. So what I want you to do is I want you to take out your connection cards that we filled out earlier this morning. On the back side are some next steps. And every week we give you some next steps, some practical things to say, you know, here's what I'm going to do this week. Here's what I'm going to think about. Here's some things I need to think through or maybe some decisions I need to make on this. And as you hold that card in your hand, I want to ask you just a couple questions. I'm going to give you a chance to respond to those in just a moment. But I want you to ask yourself, am I hard-hearted? I mean, if you're in a marriage relationship right now, is there any part of that relationship where you're just numb to your spouse? Relationally, emotionally, cognitively, mentally, and engagement, you know, thinking and dialoguing and sexually? I mean, is there any place where you're numb? Another question, is there anything you're saying yes to that's taking away from the beauty of sex within your marriage? Or anything that you're saying yes to that's actually distracting from the beauty God created you to experience? Is there anything or anyone that you need to say no to today? You say no, I'm done. I'm walking away from this. Maybe probably where many of us are at, you know, maybe we just need to allow God's grace to flow down. We've realized, man, I've done some stupid things. I've made some dumb mistakes. You know, this is something that impacts nearly every single one of us, and we just need to confess that this morning to Jesus and say, Jesus, I confess, man, I've done it my way, And I just need to receive your grace. I need there to begin to be a healing, a restoring. And the only thing you can do when you confess that is to allow God's love to begin to pour in and restore and renew. And to bring sensitivities to places where maybe you've gone numb. I mean, let's be honest, we do not want to be numb on this, friends. So I want you to take a moment and just reflect over some of those next steps in your card as you listen to this song by Coldplay that just talks about, you know, can we go back and be restored to the start?